Hi, and welcome to episode 60 of Fresh Out of Tokens podcast. This is Tanya, also known as Cipher of Tear. And to my virtual right, or maybe it's left because I'm terrible at geography, is David, if you want to say hi, David.
Hello. Yeah, I thought it was to the left last time, unless you've changed orientation.
Nah. No, still facing the same direction as when we usually record, but I am notoriously bad at geography. I get lost in my hometown, so just I'm not the person to lead the party. And that sultry chuckle you heard in the background was our guest for the week. If you want to say hello to Matt Peters of Mighty Ink Comics.
Sultry. Wow. I am just blown away by that. See, when I listen to your intro and you try to figure out where you are in conjunction to everyone else, it always reminds me of that REM song, Stand. I'm not going to sing it because I don't want everybody to turn off the podcast right now. So I'll save that for later.
You'll have to explain that later because I was just like, really? That's interesting.
Will do.
But I'm very, very happy to have Matt on the show. He's from Mighty Ink Comics and Chicago Nerd Social Club, an all-around awesome guy and geek, and we will have a lot of questions for him once we get our usual admin stuff out of the way. So if this is your first or 60th time listening to us, we have teas and other items at the I Need Diverse Games Spreadshirt Shop, where we split the profits 50-50 with our friend Chachi Bobinks. We also have a blog to complement the show, which is over at outoftokenscast.com. If you have questions, compliments, guest feedback, want to be a guest, or just have questions about the show, email us at freshoutoftokens@gmail.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at @outoftokenscast. And our musical accompaniment is provided by Mike Moody. You can hear more of her work at soundcloud.com/MikeMoody-1. And with the boring admin type stuff out of the way, Matt, I know who you are.
I'm glad. It'd be kind of weird if you did.
Hey, we've had guests that, you know, we know them basically from online and don't have a personal connection at all.
Right on.
but, you know, I've had the pleasure of chatting with you and being on panels with you and seeing you do panels around Chicago and other areas.
Yes.
So for those folks who don't know who you are, can you give us a little bit of background?
Definitely.
Not just who you are, but what it is you do.
Right on. I can definitely do that. But before I jump into that, I want to go back to the T-shirts. I guarantee if you get an I Need Diverse Games T-shirt, it's going to be 10% softer than any other T-shirt you own. Now, that's on me. That's not on these guys. So if you want to be mad about it, take it up with me at GCPD Matt. So who I am? I am the host of GCPD, the Games, Comics, and Puppy Dogs podcast. I am also the editor of Mighty Ink Comics and Entertainment, a website you can find at mightyink.net. As you mentioned, I'm a board member of the Chicago Nerd Social Club, and I run the Core Demo charity event that utilizes geekery and belly dance to raise money for the American Cancer Society. And I'm also a coin collector.
I did not know some of that. Wow.
Was it the coin collecting part? Because usually I kind of keep that under my hat.
Well, the coin collecting, but also the charity part. I did not know about that.
Oh, yeah. You know, my mom she went through chemotherapy. She was suffering from breast cancer. And so I started this in her honor. And I know the belly dance community is just very generous and they're always willing to help a good cause. So my wife, Dolores, and I, we called upon a few of our friends to help us put this event together. And it just became an annual thing. So, you know, I'm just very grateful for that. And we auction off all kind of items from different, facets of geek culture around Chicago. Lagunitas is contributing something this year. Cards Against Humanity as well. We're also auctioning off, last year we did WWE tickets. So, yeah, it's always a fun event.
Awesome. When is the event this year?
This year it's going to be in October. The official date is yet to come, so I'll make sure to share that on social media.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely be on the lookout for that.
Thank you.
Very cool. So you're not just a gamer, but you're also a comics geek. What made you realize it?
Well, that's something I owe all to my grandmother. Before anyone else, she saw what a vice-like grip gaming would have on my young attention span. Instead of demonizing it like a lot of parents do, she involved herself, and I really appreciate that. I think more parents should do that. So when I first got my NES, which I want to say was like maybe roughly 1985 or 86, I guess, She was right there with me playing Tetris, and my whole family at the time was addicted to Tetris. We all loved it. It just, you know, like I said, vice-like grip. But to get to the whole reading aspect of it, she made sure to sign me up for Nintendo Power Magazine. Did you guys, are you familiar with that at all? I know a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Right, yeah. On. So, you know, seeing as how our family,
I think I died when I was a teenager.
Yeah, unfortunately. Rest in peace, Nintendo Power. But yeah, seeing as how our family really couldn't afford like the latest and greatest games, I would supplement my playtime by reading each issue from like cover to cover. So yeah, I mean, those who are old enough to remember the magazine know that in there was a comic called Howard and Nestor, and it was starring the founder of Nintendo's Fun Club and this fictional character named Nestor. So that really whet my appetite. And of course, you know, the Sunday comics and everything. My grandmother was never hesitant to give me copies of like the Peanuts collections. And I just like ate those up. And that just evolved over time through Archie comics at grocery store checkouts to X-Men to, you know, everything. So I think the real first big name comic I really got into that made me go into a comic shop was The Death of Superman. So Superman number 75, I think it was like 92. It was all over the news.
That sounds right.
Yeah, it was just everywhere. So my dad was excited. And, you know, like I said, my family was big into keeping me reading. So anything that I wanted to read, they would make sure to just pick up for me. So, yep, day it came out, we went and drove and got Superman number 75. And it was like, okay, now I'm a comic reader.
That is so cool.
I think so.
Well, it is. And it's like, you know, so many people, because my mom was one of those moms that was just like, no, D&D is from the devil. You may not touch it.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, D&D is great because it just it trains kids to develop problem solving skills and just, you know, teamwork, that sort of thing. There's so many benefits to things like D&D and just critical thinking and video games and puzzles and stuff. There's no reason that parents shouldn't, you know, in moderation, obviously, let their kids mess around with that sort of stuff.
Oh, it's amazing. Now, you mentioned when you were, you know, talking about yourself earlier and that you were part of the Games, Comics, and Puppy Dog podcast. And because one day I asked you, I'm like, what does the GCPD mean? Because, like, you never know what someone's Twitter handle actually means.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, I got the games, got the comic. The whole puppy dog thing I was a little confused about. So, one, what's the origin story of the podcast name, but then, like, kind of, how did the podcast come out, and, like, what do you all talk about?
Well, as you guys know, one of the most difficult things in this crowded podcast community is to come up with an original catchy name. So my podcast partner and I, Archie Easter, he and I were tossing around ideas, and we wanted to make something fit with the acronym GCPD, you know, Gotham City Police Department, obviously. So, you know, we were big Batman fans. We wanted to celebrate that in the name of our show. So before I could say a word, Archie just spit out Games, Comics, and Puppy Dogs. And seeing as how nothing else made us laugh as hard as that, we rolled with it. So it's kind of like The Simpsons when they were making the Barbershop Quartet. And they said they wanted to make something that was funny the first time you hear it and less funny every consecutive time until you just get used to saying it naturally, the B-sharps. That's how we got Games, Comics, and Puppy Dogs.
Wow. Okay, that works.
And so for a long time, the running gag was, you know, we never actually discussed puppy dogs. We would always bump it like Matt Damon is bumped on the Jimmy Kimmel Show. Until I actually, my wife and I, we adopted a puppy named BMO. Named after the Adventure Time character. So, of course, he became part of the show, and we just kind of, like, reference him every now and then. So it's legit now. It's just kind of like we backed into that one.
Nice. But, you know, I know we talk about, what do you all talk about beside, you know, puppy dogs on occasion?
What do we talk about? We talk about just video games in general. We talk about what we've been playing. We talk about different comics that we've been checking out. For a long time, we were giving out what we called the Batman Superman Award. It was an award to signify excellence in the connection between comics and video games. So if a good adaptation of a video game came out in comic book form, we would award that the Soupy Bats, as Arch and I called it. Some notable instances were Tomb Raider. There were a lot of good comics based on that, of course. Some of the Mortal Kombat books are pretty decent. Some of them, now the award itself was like two-sided. So the measuring stick was either Batman Arkham Asylum, which was brand new at the time we made the award, or the low end of the spectrum was Superman 64. So if you were, not up to our standards, of course, you would get the Superman 64 end of the award.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just going to laugh about, like, the reason your podcast name has Puppy Dog in it, because that's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, it gets people talking, and it's funny, too, because occasionally in our email, we'll get solicitations from people who are marketing, like, dog toys and dog treats and that sort of thing, and they reach out to us and say, hey, would you like to demo this and maybe review it on your website? And we're like, you may want to go look at our website before you pitch us on that.
Well, they just really didn't know who they were pitching now, did they?
They did not. Yeah, it's funny the things that you get pitched, when you're doing this sort of thing. I love the fact that we're able to get some press access to, certain things beforehand and just share our excitement with it. That's always great. I love doing that. I love talking to, industry professionals and that sort of thing about what their process is, how they create, what goes through their mind, just to... Again, sharing my excitement with everybody else. Sometimes you get offered flashlights.
What?
And, you try to think of a way to tie that into the theme of what you're working with, but it just doesn't quite click. So, yeah, it's like I don't want to just accept a free flashlight in order to just get a free flashlight. So unless I can think of a really quirky way to work that into the show or the website or whatever, I just tell them, thanks, but no thanks.
I am tired. You know what I thought you said?
What's that?
Oh, I thought you said fleshlight at first.
No, I don't want to encroach on Kevin Smith's baby. That's his thing, man.
I was just like, did he just say that? Am I that tired? I heard fleshlight.
No, the fleshlight people haven't reached out to us yet, but I wouldn't rule it out.
Oh my God.
You never know.
I have a podcast movement story about that once. Once we get to the next question.
Yeah.
Okay, but we're circling back to that, definitely.
All right. So, yeah, the next question we had is you did the cast a day in June. What prompted you to try that, and how did you pull it off?
Yes, thankfully.
Doing a podcast a day.
Thankfully, I did pull it off. I made it through to the end with equal parts stubbornness and caffeine. Seriously, though, I had a ton of help. I had a ton of help. I know that, it kind of comes across as a one-man show because I'm usually doing the intro and the outro and everything. But just to give folks that aren't familiar a taste of what Cast a Day is. So the idea is that for an entire month, I do a new episode, a new podcast episode. It doesn't necessarily have to be about games, comics, or puppy dogs, but the consistency has to be there. There has to be something fresh every day. It has to be interesting. It can't just be something phoned in. It has to feature me in some way, shape, or form. So I'm not just saying, hey, you guys drive. I'll just sit back and do whatever else. So, yes, again, thankfully I got it done. Of course, Tanya, you were kind enough to join me for an episode. And, yeah, a lot of folks really dug that one. And I insist to the listeners of Fresh Out of Tokens, if you haven't heard my episode with Tanya, please go check it out. It's on iTunes. My dear understanding wife also volunteered and sometimes insisted on being involved, depending on the episode's topics. I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, though. What prompted me to try it? So I heard a quote from Jamie Foxx a while back about the process he went through for auditioning for Ray, play Ray Charles. And he credits the fact that his grandmother insisted he learn to play piano. I think it was like at 3 years old, and he credits his grandmother insisting that he learn to play with him getting the role. So she told him that adding tools to his toolbox and skills to his growing catalog would get him to the other side of the tracks, metaphorically. And it was effective. And I love podcasting. I love having conversations with folks, as I mentioned earlier. I also wanted to challenge myself to get out of my comfort zone and really try some things I never had before. Like before Cast a Day, I really hadn't messed around with Photoshop at all. And one of the stipulations of Cast a Day was that I would make a new image, a new logo or something on a daily basis. Sometimes it turned out really impressive. Sometimes it didn't quite work, but it was still mine. I'm not a big game streamer, but I got on a Twitch for a bit. Every Saturday we would have, you know, just video game streaming, that sort of thing. I was able to speak with some folks, some indie comic creators and people who really foster Chicago's geek community. Yeah, and everything didn't come to fruition exactly as I intended, but what I did accomplish, I'm proud of. So there's that. Above all, I hope everybody was entertained. That's one of the most important things.
Yeah, it was fun talking to you because, like, you know, it was a good, like, nice chunk of time, but it wasn't, like, too long, but it wasn't too short either. You know, it was like sitting down for a cup of coffee.
Exactly. I wanted it to really have that feeling, too. I didn't want to, you know, overstay my welcome on a daily basis because I know it's a big commitment for somebody to really tune into the same podcast every day. And I went in with that mindset. So I wanted to make it, you know, easy enough for somebody to listen to it on their drive into work or their ride home from work and really just feel like they're sitting in on a conversation between a couple of folks or just, you know, hanging out. But what I'm really happy about is the diversity of guests featured on the show, and that happened organically. So that was really cool to see that happen. So I had most of the episodes featured, you know, people of color, women or women of color. And I think it's important that we continue that trend.
Definitely. Now, when you're not doing Cast Today, how often does the show come out?
Well, the show, GCPD proper, it has a sporadic schedule right now. Archie and I have not kind of been on the same wavelength as far as scheduling goes, but we're working on getting it up and running again very soon. But trust me, there's enough Cast Today content there that if you're new to the podcast, by the time you finish with that, we'll definitely be back on the air.
Cool. So Matt and I have had a lot of conversations. You know, the whole point of the show is to have conversations about diversity and intersectionality. Mm-hmm. And something that's been, you know, in the kind of nerdy sphere has been diversity in comics. And this is anything from Black Panther to the new Iron Man, you know, being taken over by Riri, who's only 16. And just the other day, it was announced Roxanne Gay is being brought on to write for Marvel. Do you think that this is a step in the right direction, or does it come across as pandering? And I chose that word intentionally, mm-hmm. because that's what a lot of people jump to when they talk about diversity.
Well, I'm glad that you phrased it like that, because first I want to say that I'm not giving Marvel or anyone else a pass for the way that they've handled characters of color in the past. If anything, they should be taken to task and learn from, you know, the past, see what they've done, see what they've done wrong, see what they've done right, and try to make that stick. So that being said, I do appreciate the icons that they've given the readers over the years, like Black Panther, like Luke Cage, and what they represent. It's what's going on now that frustrates me with these also-ran characters. Like, back in the 80s and 90s, you know, you had James Rhodes, you had Rhodey. And I know that's our mutual friend Caitlin Rosberg's, you know, favorite character in the world.
Yes. Hi, Caitlin.
Yes. But he was never truly Iron Man. You know, even reading the book, you knew that he was just kind of standing in for Tony Stark. The book is still very much about Tony Stark and how he's the hero, how he's going through his struggle with alcoholism and, you know, the repercussions of that. You know, and he ultimately, you know, Rhodey did ultimately become War Machine, but it still kind of felt like, okay, this is an additional character to Iron Man. He's a supporting character. They did the same thing or something similar with Captain Marvel. They did it with Captain America now with Sam Wilson and with Spider-Man. Now, they did a little bit better with Miles Morales. They keep handling these stories slightly better every time, but it's oftentimes portrayed more as like press release fodder than an organic story.
Okay. Well, because, I mean, with Miles Morales, we've gotten him in the comics, but every time they make a new Spider-Man movie, it's the same fucking tired Peter Parker retread.
Definitely. And, you know, I think a big reason for that is, of course, they want these movies to make money. And not saying that Miles Morales isn't a great character, because I really do enjoy the stories that are written about him. Fans seem to be hesitant to really embrace them to the point where they'll support a movie. And that's kind of the commentary of the online community too, but also a commentary on Marvel needing to build him up a little bit more, come into his own, you know. But I gotta say, where Marvel has truly shined lately is letting black writers write some of their classic black characters. Because, you know, with all these other instances I mentioned, in a lot of these cases, these are just the same old, like, you know, white dudes that have been creating these characters all along. These aren't the black voices that you need behind these black characters. But lately, and I really think this kicked off big time with Ta-Nehisi Coates, you know, he's killing it on Black Panther. And then David Walker, he's causing a big stir as well with Nighthawk and Power Man and Iron Fist. And I hope that trend continues.
Yeah, because I don't think you can keep copies of Ta-Nehisi Coates' Black Panther anywhere in stock.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. For a while, that was the number one selling comic of 2016. I think like up until past the middle of the year. And you're right, they just could not keep that in stock. My friend Terry Gant, who runs Third Coast Comics, he said that, you know, people, they didn't just pick up the first issue just to collect the first issue. They came back for the second and the third, and he was surprised by that response. So that's definitely good to see.
Well, and it's also, you know, the name power behind Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Very true. Admittedly, before I heard that he would be writing Black Panther and the importance of the fact that he was writing Black Panther, I hadn't read any of his books. So I took the time to read Between the World and Me. Talk about a gut punch. I mean, just so much of that book just communicated just an accurate portrayal of what people of color go through and what I go through. And, you know, it was just, it took my breath away. So if for anything, of this whole experience of Ta-Nehisi Coates writing Black Panther, I'm glad that it directed me towards that book.
And that book fucked me up.
Right. Right. You just need to kind of like sit for a minute. Like, okay. Ooh.
Yeah. My friend Monver Air was just like, he just sent me a link. He's like, read it. And I'm like, okay. Just I'll read it. Chill out. And then when I read it, I'm like, I'm glad you told me about it, but I kind of hate you for a minute because it fucked me up so bad.
Right, right. Like, you know, if the term now is to be woke, that's the cup of coffee right there for a lot of people. And dude, what's even more intense is if you listen to the audiobook, he narrates the audiobook, and you can just hear the intensity in his voice as he goes through some of those more difficult chapters.
No, I don't think I could do the audiobook. I'd be somewhere crying.
Yeah. Yeah, I tried to share that with a couple of people as well. They were like, man, I had to give up in the middle. It's just, it's intense. But it's reality.
Yep. It's deep. But, you know, we got on the tangent about Ta-Nehisi Coates and started hogging the mic.
Yeah. So I guess you want to move on, Tanya, is what you're saying.
Yes, that's true.
All right.
So I didn't mean to make it like just like super intense, but yeah.
No, it's not that. It's just that, you know, I can get off on a tangent real easy, especially about something like this, because it means so much to me. And we can have that deep conversation, but I'm just like, we'll look up. It'll be like 10 o'clock at night for me and Matt. And it's like, oh, well, shit, that's going to be a real long episode.
Right, right.
Aside from Marvel finally sort of getting their act together, at least, you know, visibly, we seem to be getting all sorts of fail from DC. it's kind of terrible. Do you think they'll ever catch up or do any better, especially when it comes to like diversity?
No. Let me rephrase that more diplomatically.
I'm on board. I believe you.
I'm just like, that was the fastest no I've ever heard out of you, Matt.
Yeah, no. You know, I want to trust them, you know, because I do like a lot of the DC characters. But I got to say, what DC is doing on television is incredible.
Yeah, their TV game is great.
Yeah. I mean, you know, much respect to the writers and actors on their TV shows. I mean, because the actors, they seem just as passionate as, you know, any fan that's reading the comics, that's playing the games, whatever. Because, you know, you see these interviews with Grant Gustin, and I was impressed. And I'm just going to, like, go off on this tangent for a second. We can circle back. But Grant Gustin, he was asked about the new Flash outfit from the Justice League preview that came out. And, you know, he mentioned that he hadn't seen it. So the interviewer showed him the picture on their phone. And just right away, he's like, that's incredible. Which, you know, he's part of their group, so he's usually going to say something positive about it. But he was excited. He's like, that's sick. That's incredible. And then he dropped this. He goes, it looks just like Flash's suit from Injustice. And you're not really expecting that from an actor who's just playing a part, because Grant Gustin is more than just that. He's a fan and he's enjoying what he does. And I love that.
Yeah. I kind of think that the strength of their TV game, I feel like it's coming more from the CW than from DC itself, just by how DC's been acting.
Yeah, it's Guggenheim and all those other guys who are involved in the writing over there. They're just kicking butt. But speaking of Flash, kind of going back to the original question, one of my favorite characters in DC television, and I mean just comics now because of the Flash show, is his adoptive father-in-law, Joe West. And he's played by Jesse L. Martin, who, you know, he is an amazing actor. He's an amazing singer. People know him from his Broadway work. But just the emotion that he brings to that show, I mean, it's just great to see this actor of color just step up and be that rock, you know, for this superhero character. And yeah, Jesse L. Martin just brings it every time. I love it.
I'm real behind on The Flash. I don't know. It's just like it didn't keep my interest enough for me to tune in every week.
Mm-hmm.
So one of these days I'll binge watch it and catch up.
What are you watching? Are you watching Arrow or anything else like that?
Oh, no.
No?
Man, fuck Steve Amell.
Uh-oh. What did Steve Amell do?
Be Steve Amell and talk shit about American politics that he knows nothing about.
Oh, yeah. No, they shouldn't talk about politics ever.
Well, politics and just, you know, he just made a lot of really insensitive things and pulled the I'm sorry you were offended thing.
Oh, not that.
And like when I see the Arrow, I think of the original Power Rangers, which is probably really uncharitable. But it's goofy to me. Like, it doesn't really, I don't get a deep, dark, superhero-y vibe from it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, this isn't like, to me, it's not like The Flash or Daredevil or anything that's like on Netflix where I don't even feel any sympathy for the Arrow. It's like, oh, okay, so you're the rich white dude who's had this terrible thing happen. Yes, it's terrible that your family members died, but you've got all this money to go be a vigilante and no one can really stop you. It's kind of like Batman.
It's pretty much exactly like Batman. It's the Batman they wanted to do.
Capitalist.
Yeah. So, David, I'm sorry. What have you?
It's all right.
Do you watch any of this stuff at all? Like, are you checking
it? Oh yeah, I do. I keep up. I couldn't watch The Arrow for the longest time. I got like two seasons through it, and then The Flash became a thing, and I'm like, oh, this is what I wanted from a TV show. Because The Arrow for the first four seasons tried to be so dark, and it just didn't work when you're the Green Arrow.
Yeah.
And now they just fight wizards literally named Dark. They've given up on the grittiness.
But it's Dark with an H, so it's okay.
Oh my God.
Wow. You'll never guess where they threw that H in, but it's in there.
Wow, you went there. Me.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm a fan of the DC stuff. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they kind of got some love from me for a minute because they had like several people of color in the cast for maybe two or three episodes, but they fell prey to the temptation to kill one of the black dudes off, so they kind of lost points there. Yeah, but I look at shows like Legends of Tomorrow and the character Firestorm, I don't like how they continually drug Jefferson every single, like, not every single episode, but it seems like in their first season, he got drugged at least twice. And that's two times too many. It's just kind of weird. Older man knocking out a young teen to bring him on this time travel adventure. That's not how Doctor Who does it. They could have been better about that.
Yeah.
Now you just want facts and logic, Matt.
Ah, yeah. What am I thinking?
I wasn't entirely like appalled when they had Jefferson go back to the 50s.
Yeah, I was biting my nails that whole episode. Like, it was a horror flick to me. Like, oh crap, he's sitting at the counter. Oh no.
Yeah, I was just asking because I was interested in your opinion, because my opinion doesn't really matter in that area.
No, we can talk about
it. I'm not an expert.
Yeah, the way it was depicted, you're right, it was a little optimistic, just the fact that he was able to get through certain situations on that episode just by talking his way out of it. That was definitely optimistic. But yeah, just, I don't know, it just added an added layer of drama to it when, you know, he's doing things that, like, folks normally wouldn't do in the 50s and, you know, just being himself. I don't know. I'm glad they got out of there. I'll say that.
Yeah. See that? I'm going to skip that episode. I think I'll just let that one go.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember correctly, the three of them get left in the 50s at one point, and only the white guy in the group is a little sad when the time machine comes to pick them up.
There's so many things I could say with that.
Like you said, that would be the extra long version of the podcast.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you always see people who romanticize the 50s and think it was bunny hops and milkshakes and, you know, let's go do the WAP. And I'm like, yeah, for you.
Right. You know, one of the common things that I mentioned is time travel is fun unless you're black. That's, yeah, you have a short window. And even then, you still have to be careful exactly where and when you go. Like, I would think that somebody in the 50s would come to present day thinking, okay, everything must be better now. Not so much.
Nope. Look, if I was from the 50s and wanted a pair, I'd be like, send me back right now.
At least it's clear, right? At least it's not just under a veil of, you know, to be fair, and let me play devil's advocate and all that other bullshit.
Ooh, devil has enough advocates, y'all. Stop. Speaking of devil's advocacy.
Yes.
So, you know, we've talked about diversity in comics and things like that. But it's a conversation also happening again with because of movies,
mm-hmm.
Especially around, you know, the new Ghostbusters reboot and Patty's character. Have you seen the new Ghostbusters? Or are you not going to?
I have not seen the new Ghostbusters, and I've been on the fence about seeing it. At least I was until you did me the favor of writing your piece on Polygon and telling me exactly what I feared, that the depiction of Leslie Jones's character Patty in the previews wasn't just strictly just out of place or misconstrued. No, no. That was just the tip of the iceberg when it came to the tomfoolery they had her up to in that film. The disrespect, the fact that she couldn't be a scientist, and just all that stuff. I mean, I got to tell you, I'm not really that big a fan of the Ghostbusters movies from back in the day. Not for lack of, you know, enjoyment or whatever. I was a kid or whatever, so I didn't see the movies first. I actually saw the cartoon before anything else. So in the cartoon, you know, of course, it's all four of them hanging out. They have equal footing. They're all hanging out in the firehouse, and they all get jokes in, whatever. But then I see the movie finally a couple of years later, and Winston isn't in it until like the second or third act. I'm like, what happened here? Where's Winston? Why are there only three Ghostbusters? I couldn't put it together. And then, you know, we get this depiction of Patty in the new one, and it's like, okay, well, yay, win for feminism, but boo, that's probably not the best depiction of a character of color you could do.
So it's a win for white feminism, and I said that, and I'm gonna say it, and if anybody wants to fight me about it, y'all can at me, because that's been my last week. Well, and part of it was, you know, like, and David, if you've seen the movie or have thoughts, feel free to jump in as well.
I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to at some point. I have every intention of seeing the movie, but I haven't seen it.
My problem one was the trailer and the way that Patty was portrayed. I mean, she literally slaps a ghost out of one of the other Ghostbusters. But there's also, like, and it's just, and this could be more my anger / annoyance with the love letters to Holtzman, who I can't remember the woman's real name, you know, who is played by gay.
Kate McKinnon.
Thank you. Who is gay in you know, outside of her role, and apparently her character is supposed to be gay, but then they wouldn't let Paul Feig say so explicitly. But everyone's like, oh my god, Holtzman, I'm so gay for Holtzman. And I'm just like, okay, are you actually gay for Holtzman? Or is this like the female equivalent of No Homo?
Yeah, because I was going to say, that sounds very, like a very 90s way of saying that. That's so odd, you know?
Well, it's very odd. And like just today, I saw an article that was basically like, oh my god, Holtzman, and I can't do the thing with my voice I like to do that shows my utter disgust with those articles. And, you know, and it's on a publication that I like and enjoy, but, you know, you're just forgetting about the other three characters when you idolize Holtzman. And yes, I know that we don't get enough gay characters, we don't get enough lesbian characters that are explicitly gay and lesbian. That said, She's not the only character in the movie, and actually her character kind of creeped me out because of how she acts.
Hmm.
And, you know, it could be like my own kind of weird perceptions and biases as I went into the movie, but she reminded me of people I've liked that have set off all the red flags with me.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you are weird in the way that is not conducive to my weird.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's part of why I can't get all the, oh my God, Holtzman, I love Holtzman so well. But the pushback on, what do you mean it's not a feminist masterpiece? And I'm like, did you miss the entire part with the black woman who works for the MTA? And it's like they even talk to her like, oh, well, you know, this isn't where you pick up your food, because they wind up living above a Chinese food place. And it's like, they just assume she's not there for their services. And so they could have flipped the tropes. They could have had her either be one of the scientists. Because I know people keep bringing up, well, originally she was supposed to have Melissa McCarthy's role. Why didn't they do it? What was the point of that? Like, you could have bucked the trend and still done it. Because all of them are comedic actresses. It's not like you're making a big difference if you have her in the same tropey-ass role.
Right. And, you know, people make the argument like, well, Leslie Jones, that's kind of her shtick. She does the, you know, boisterous, you know, just out there, you know, almost stereotypical black character in her normal comedy, in her everyday comedy. But I would say, you know, Paul Feig, that's even more of a reason to challenge her to do something else and still be funny.
Right. I mean, she could have still been hilarious. Or as a lot of people have brought up, what I wish it could have been, it's like, I've actually got a PhD in history, but I couldn't find tenure, so this is where I'm working. Which would have made it slightly better, and would have been a hell of a lot more accurate.
That would have been a nice B story.
Right. So, it's not the same as these women who have doctorates and are looking for tenure, or, you know, looking to do this research. They treat her as an add-on from the minute they meet her. And if you read the Polygon piece, you know, she has, I can't think of a good way to describe it, but you know, she comes up with these random historical facts when it's conducive and relevant to move the story along so the white characters can go save the day. So,
and that doesn't sound fun.
No. And it's like, I know I took this bias going to see the film. I went to see the film because I wrote the piece. Otherwise I still wouldn't have seen it. And you know, there's things that I observed that were worse than the trailer, and you know, I couldn't dig it. And they threw away a chance to do better.
I mean, and it's really unfortunate, because this could have just died the death of being a subpar movie or a swing and a miss or something like that. But you still had all these outspoken MRAs and, you know, all these Twitter trolls just coming at it, where people felt like they had to step up and defend it. You know, people coming at Leslie Jones. That's definitely not cool what happened there at all, because at the end of the day, this was her job. This was a film that she acted in. So there's no reason to disrespect a person in real life for something that you didn't appreciate on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you're bringing facts and logic to this party, Matt.
I keep making that mistake. I don't know. I'm a guest on your show, and here I am just disrespecting. Okay.
Yeah, the one area of expertise I really have is like story structure. And then from what you say, it sounds like they completely like underutilized that character as a character function. She should have been like the person who knew everything, because she would know the local hauntings and so on. So she would be the person who would end up doing the most explaining throughout the film, if you used that sort of character the most efficiently you could, or in that sort of story.
Yeah, and honestly, it felt like she got cast for the stereotypical character she plays, and then they really didn't know how to utilize her in the story. And it basically,
David,
go ahead. I'm sorry. Oh, go ahead. I'm
sorry. No, I'm sorry. Interpol, please. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, it's like a repeat of what they did with Winston, although she showed up in the film slightly earlier.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, Cartoon Winston, awesome. Everybody had a good, you know, time, hung out, busted ghosts, got slimed, all that stuff. Movie Winston, just there to do his job. Didn't quite get anything going on. It's like, wow. No wonder Eddie Murphy turned down the role.
Yep.
Yeah, but David, sure. I didn't want to gloss over the fact that you said hauntings in there. I didn't know if that was a pun or if that was just by accident, but bravo, sir.
If it's a pun, I haven't even thought of it now that you pointed it out.
It was accidental pun array.
I love it.
Those are the best ones, though. Those are the best ones.
So I guess we should dabbled in this a little bit already, but what does diversity done right in media, in the media you consume, look like?
Well, I'm going to go off nerd culture for a minute here and just give some love to Aziz Ansari's Master of None that comes to mind. Again, this is where that organic diversity comes in. Like, for many of the roles, Aziz Ansari and his team just put out this open casting call without specifying race. With others, obviously, he wanted to have them more appropriate to the story he was trying to tell, which is the journey of a young Indian man, son of Indian immigrants, just trying to make it in the American film industry. And he runs into H. John Benjamin along the way, which is always awesome. But yeah, I love shows like Fresh Off the Boat. I like Blackish, but I do prefer the Carmichael Show a little bit more because David Alan Greer, first of all, you know, classic comedic actor. I love what he does. And Gerard Carmichael, I mean, I feel like he's still finding his footing. He still puts his foot in his mouth a lot, too. But he's definitely a unique voice. And the fact that he has this show to really focus on issues and diversity, and he brings different perspectives to the table. Like, he brings just, you know, millennial perspective. He brings the person that grew up in the 90s through his brother. He brings in his father, just like the old school mentality. And at the end of every episode, they don't really settle the argument that they're having, you know, whatever it may be, but they do bring in some, you know, good conversation about it in between the jokes, of course.
Cool. What about comics? What would that look like ideally?
Ideally, diversity done right in comics. I know they tried something with the Avengers recently, but again, that goes back to you need people of color behind the pen as well. Diversity done right, I gotta go back to Black Panther. I mean, really, they hit a home run with that one.
Yeah. Huh, interesting. Because I actually didn't like Master of None.
Oh, why not?
Sometimes he's very hit or miss with his comedy. There were some jokes I just didn't find funny when I tried to watch it, and I'm like, okay, done. Although I'm getting that way about a lot of stand-up anyway, and I was just like, you know what, this isn't really hitting it for me. Maybe I'm not in the mood for it, but just wasn't digging the humor in the first episode.
Right on. Yeah, the first episode was kind of slow, and admittedly, a lot of the show is based on his last stand-up special that he did for Netflix. So if you watch that, a lot of that stuff is kind of just like visited territory, at least for him. But, you know, I don't know. I was kind of hooked on it by the cinematography. And you're right, some of the jokes do miss. But what he's trying to tackle, you know, I do appreciate that. And the fact that he used his actual parents to play his parents on the show, I thought that was pretty cool, too.
Yeah, but you know what? I'm pretty harsh with my free time. So if you can't capture my interest in that first episode, that, you know, that first half hour of a movie, I'm going to kind of check out and be like, you know what? There's plenty of other things I can go do.
Yes, I'm like that with anime. Like, I can't commit to an anime knowing that it's going to be like 50 some odd episodes. If I don't like the first one, if you don't hook me with that, then I'm out. That's it.
Right.
And you're very like, nope. Have.
Oh, anime just goes on forever.
You know, it's funny because yeah, the ones that you want to go on forever, they wrap up fairly quickly. Like, I love Samurai Champloo. I thought that was a great show. The music is fantastic. And the animation is beautiful. And I think that was only like 12 or 13 episodes. Same thing with Cowboy Bebop.
Man, Bebop needs to come back. Done well, but needs to come back.
Yes.
No live action movie with Keanu Reeves.
No, you know, I don't trust Hollywood with live action anime because they always want to cast somebody like Scarlett Johansson to play the starring character. Mm-hmm. Or I think they wanted Keanu Reeves to play Akira at one point. What? Why? Why? Why?
Because Hollywood.
Because Hollywood.
Yeah, that's just it. Because Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on that cheerful note, we got some listening questions, but before we move on to those, I was wondering what's next for you, Matt? What's going on in your world?
Well, what's next for me is after we get done recording, I'm going to go downstairs and make a sandwich, maybe peanut butter and jelly. I don't know. Still haven't decided yet. But further on in the future, this September, I'll be joining some friends of mine at a Star Trek 50th anniversary panel. which is going to be at Alder After Dark. October, CNSC will be holding our annual Nerdoween costume party. We plan to have a comic book drive at Open Books, so stay tuned for that. And also, last but not least, I'll be launching a new podcast soon called Since We Last Spoke. It'll be like Cast a Day, but with a much saner schedule.
Okay.
But all kind of diverse topics, and we're definitely bringing back Resnaculous Tuesday, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
Cool. I'm on that panel with you, by the way, at the Adler Planetarium.
Oh, yeah? Very cool.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned it, because I need to put it on my calendar. It's like, I know it's happening. I need to put it on my calendar, because I don't want Mitch to yell at me. So, our usual friends and listeners have sent in some questions. I say usual because Thane1982 always comes through with some questions for you. And I'll get his first one out of the way. He wants to know, what is your favorite comic / manga that is based on a game?
Oh, man. Okay. There are a few that get it completely right. They get that tone down and everything. And there are a few that unfortunately fall way below expectations. So I got a couple of them. So thank you, Thane, for asking that question. I love talking about this one book in particular, Injustice Gods Among Us. It's based on the fighting game from Warner Brothers. It's kind of a prequel to the game, but it's gone on for like 5 years now. And the reason it's lasted so long is because the story is so well written. It's great. And I highly recommend it. If you are a fan of Injustice or DC Comics in general, this could be the book that gets you hooked on comic books if you're not reading anything now. Now, if we're going best of all time, at least by consistency's sake, you got to give it up to Sonic the Hedgehog. I mean, this book has been going on for I don't know how many years, decades, but you know, the team over at Archie Comics, they always bend the lore of their Sonic comic book to match the current Sonic product. So, say for instance, you know, when they had those two Sonic the Hedgehog cartoons going on at the same time, they somehow evolved it from the syndicated simple one to the more intense, like Saturday morning animation one. So that was pretty cool to see. Even when they made the decision to change Dr. Robotnik's name to Eggman, which is still a terrible choice, by the way, they managed to make that make sense within the storyline. They even have the Werehog in there for some reason, but it's entertaining. So, yeah, I mean, really, you gotta take your hat off to Archie Comics for making a Sonic book that works well. And they crossed over with Mega Man, which is also a good book from Archie as well.
Wow, I didn't even know that there was still a Mega Man or Sonic comic book going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it just kind of falls under the radar because it's just been going for so long. But yeah, it's still there, and the artwork is still tight. Storylines are good.
Do you want to take Tim's next question?
Sure. Yeah, his next question is, what's the one comic you'd suggest to someone to show them why comics are awesome?
Okay, and that's another one that's a bit tricky. It really depends on your audience. So for someone who's new, if they're a sci-fi fan, I'd recommend Saga by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples. If they're into horror, I'd say Walking Dead. And if they're into superheroes in general, and you really just want to give them just fireworks for your eyes, I can't recommend anything better than Kingdom Come by Alex Ross and Mark Waid. That's just a classic, and it's fully painted, and it's gorgeous. They just came out with a 20th anniversary edition of it. It's great.
Cool. And excuse me. Tim's last question was, what's a comic you wish you could rewrite for any reason?
And this one unfortunately came to me very quickly. when given the recent attention on it, I wish I could rewrite Batman the Killing Joke. And I'm saying this knowing it's impossible because you can't touch an Alan Moore classic. Well, they tried with Watchmen, but you see how that turned out. But I would definitely give Barbara Gordon more to do. It seems like in a story that centers on a very pivotal moment of her life, she's very unimportant in the grand scheme of the story. And that's unfortunate. I mean, people love the Joker. They love Batman. But come on, you're crippling one of the major supporting characters in the Batman book. We need a little bit more Babs in there.
Yeah. I mean, the Killing Joke was terrible.
Have you heard about the... there's a animated movie of the Killing Joke that either just came out or is about to come out. And apparently it's worse.
Is involved. And so is the voice of Batman, Kevin Conroy, the voice of Joker, Mark Hamill. All these iconic names in Batman lore were involved. And it, apparently, yeah, from like you said, David, it's kind of cringy from what I understand. To the point where from what I've heard about it, I really don't have a need to watch that either.
Yeah.
No, I'm skipping out on the Killing Joke anything ever again.
It's just, it hasn't aged well. It wasn't good when it came out in the first place, but it really hasn't aged well.
Right.
So yeah, that's the one that I would tackle.
I wish someone else would.
Right. I mean, you know, we can still have that important moment in Barbara Gordon's life, but let's let another writer take a stab at it.
We also got questions from Geek Melange, who was on the show recently.
Hey, I know her.
The first question is, what science fiction and fantasy story or novel do you think would make a great video game?
Well, if we were going back a couple of years, I would say Ender's Game. But what I know about Orson Scott Card now, unfortunately, not so much. But I still got a strong second runner-up, and that runner-up is Stephen King's Dark Tower. Now, it's a very intricate story, it's very involved, but there are moments in this series where the gunslinger throws down, and I think that would make a great action game. I think it would be akin to Red Dead Redemption with all the action going on in there. And Red Dead Redemption is one of my all-time favorite games, too. So, you know, just that Old West feel. So if you think about that, you know, Red Dead Redemption, the Old West feel, and all the different arenas that the gunslinger goes to, it could cause for some very exciting gameplay.
Interesting. And the movie will be out, I think, was it next year?
I think so. I'm very interested in that. I can't wait to see. I mean, Idris Elba, come on, you know.
I know, right?
Anything he's in, it's like, all right, you at least got to see it to see what accent Idris is doing. And then after that, you got to see his performance.
True. I mean, it's just, I want to see Idris Elba, so that's all there is to it. And our friend Geek Melange is the next question. Shifts away actually from SF and fantasy to the WWE, which I freely admit I have not seen the WWE in a long ass time. But if you were a WWE wrestler, what would your character name and personality be?
Well, I'm a fan of the old 80s era of wrestling where every wrestler seemed to have a day job. You had IRS, Irwin R. Scheister. You had the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, the Repo Man, the Mountie for some reason. So every mid-card wrestler had some type of weird day job. Big Boss Man. He was a police officer from Macon County, Georgia. So I would be the shill. I would be a living infomercial. So I come out
like, what?
Yes, I would be the shill, you know, because I want to win the title because I know that if I have the title around my waist, that people are going to pay more attention to me and it'll move my products. So it'd be kind of like Diamond Dallas Page, DDP Yoga and all that, except I'd be bringing that spirit to the ring with me and that intensity of wanting to make a sale. You can see I've given this a lot of thought already.
I see. I was just like, you went way back. I haven't heard Diamond Dallas Page in a long ass time. So.
Oh, man.
Sounds amazing.
Diamond Dallas Page is actually doing pretty well for himself. He's like this big time yoga guru now. Like, he's been helping out a lot of the old wrestlers who, you know, have turned to drugs and alcohol over the years, like, Jake the Snake Roberts. He was a mess. And there's a documentary out now, about Jake the Snake's, struggle and his rise back to, you know, sobriety. So yeah. And he accredits a big part of that to DDP Yoga. It's amazing.
That's so wild.
I know. But like even WWE does have its tendrils in all kind of different media as well. I mean, look no further than Xavier Woods. He's a member of the New Day on WWE programming. He's also he has his own gaming channel on YouTube called Up Up Down Down. And it's very entertaining. What he'll do is he'll bring this travel PS4 with him. And so wherever they go on the road, he pulls one of the other wrestlers aside and he kind of interviews them while he'll play video games with them and he'll put it up on his YouTube channel. So that's always cool. It's always fun to watch.
Huh. I'll check that out.
And he's an entertaining dude. He's actually one of the smartest people in wrestling, too. He's well on his way to earning his PhD. You know, he does that online in between tours. He's an affluent trombone player. As a matter of fact, there was at one point they were fighting this tag team, Edge and Christian, and they met them backstage, and they felt like they had achieved victory. So what else is he going to do but play the Final Fantasy victory fanfare on his trombone?
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's worth it just to see those moments alone. But, yeah, they go nuts.
Yeah. And so Geek Milan sent another question, but I just, A, want to hear this question spoken by someone who's not me and get the answer, because this is something that is a burning question ever since I saw this.
Okay.
So, David, take it away.
Yeah. And I am glad that you said this word earlier. What is the most ridiculous snack you've had for Risnaculous Tuesdays? Inquiring minds need to know. Need is in all capital letters.
You got it, man. So one of my favorite parts of Cast Today was the Risnaculous Tuesday episode. So every Tuesday, my wife Dolores and I, we would sit down and we would just try some outrageous type of snack food. You know, just all these different flavors of Oreos they have out there and all the different M&Ms and everything. We would just sit down and try those. So we tried some pretty nasty stuff. But the one thing that sticks out in my mind, and it seems like it's kind of like low-hanging fruit, but they came out with these special edition 4th of July M&Ms that were s'more flavored. And, I mean, they were just repulsive. Like, you know that they use chemicals when they make all these candies and treats and everything, and that's fine. That's cool. But usually it's just not so apparent to your taste buds. No, this tasted like you were biting into chemicals and kind of tasted like marshmallow. Like the chemical flavor was so overpowering, it just drowned out the chocolate of the M&M. And that's not good. No, it was just horrible. Ah, I don't even want to think about it.
Oh, I'm making such a face because my brain just went, s'mores, but s'mores are delicious. But how did you fuck that up?
Right. I mean, and you know what's great though? Oreo came out with a s'more flavor. That was delicious. Some of the other stuff that we tried that people really seem to react to, in particular, the different Pop-Tart flavors that they've come out with lately. So the pink lemonade, A&W root beer, and orange crush. I don't know what they were thinking with the A&W root beer flavor, but it wasn't root beer. It tasted like I was eating the cardboard that the Pop-Tart box is made out of. It was just so nasty. And so the good thing about Risnaculous Tuesday is D has a very expressive reaction to these things. So we try them so you don't have to. So if anybody was curious about the A&W root beer Pop-Tart, please listen to that episode of Risnaculous Tuesday. Because D's reaction is hilarious. I also got together with my buddies John Craig and Aaron J, and we tried the Cheetos. What were they? Like the Mac and Cheetos from Burger King?
Ew.
Yeah, I thought so too, but they were actually pretty okay. It's just about 10 minutes after you eat them, they don't sit very well. And yeah, you just get sluggish. It just wears you out.
I mean, you ate cheese that is baked in cheese. What did you expect?
That's true. I was expecting a lot worse, though. I mean, at least it was delicious going in. But yeah, man, it's just make sure you have nothing else to do for the rest of the day. And you just have a lot of water on hand if you're going to try them.
Gotcha. Well, sadly, our time is winding down. And what we usually kind of tie up the show with is talking about what we've been playing or reading or watching, depending on who our guest is. And since you are our esteemed guest, you get to go first. So what have you been playing, reading, and or watching?
Okay, I'm going to knock this out. Now, thankfully, because Cast Today took up my entire month of June, I'm still on Fallout 4 because I'm still catching up with all the DLC that came out for it. I love, love, love Fallout 4. I was addicted to Skyrim. And so they gave me Skyrim with projectile weapons, and I was on board. So, yeah, loving Fallout 4. Another thing that I experienced during Cast Today, and I just gave this a try because I played Mighty No. 9, and I wanted to physically throw that across the room, Shovel Knight. Shovel Knight is the best Pac-Man game that's come out in years. It's a lot of fun. It's funny. If you haven't played it, please do. I just finished it a couple nights ago, and I know I'm super late on it, but man, it was a lot of fun. And you can usually find me playing some iteration of Pac-Man, and I am addicted to Pac-Man Championship Edition, Championship Edition DX Plus on Xbox 360, which thankfully is available to play on Xbox One, and Pac-Man 256. That started out as a mobile game, which was a, you know, it had a lot of walls, a lot of pay-to-play walls and everything, but they released it for consoles, and it's a little bit more forgiving now as far as what power-ups they give you and, you know, being able to play over and over. So, yeah, that's usually what I'm playing lately.
Okay. David, what are you playing?
Oh, first I wanted to ask Matt, have you checked out the Bethesda supported mod thing on Fallout 4 at all?
I haven't yet, because I want to finish the game proper before I start messing around with that. Because I know the way that I did Skyrim, I kind of did a similar way. I played it on console first, and then I got it on PC. And right now I know that they're still kind of beta testing the mods for PS4. And unfortunately, that's the console I got it on, so they're not available to me yet.
All right.
Yeah. But I can't wait, because I want to straight up fight a Thomas the Tank Engine, mech or something.
I don't know. The jury is still out. That's why I wanted to hear your input.
Right on.
I've been still mostly just playing a Fallout Shelter, because I haven't gone through all of the quests in it yet, because it has quests now.
Oh.
I still play like Pokemon Go whenever I have to run errands.
Hey, Pokemon Go is legit.
So, David, do you see yourself like just treating it like an also-ran? Is it kind of like a pedometer, or are you like actively engaging in Pokemon Go as you go?
It varies based on how, like, when I have to do stuff. Like, if I'm going to the dentist, as I am going to have to do a lot, apparently, I'll hit the stuff that's on the way while I'm walking, and I won't really explore or anything, but occasionally if something, like, particularly interesting shows up and I'm not doing anything that I can't, you know, spend a little delay a little bit, then I'll go look for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same here.
But yeah, I mostly just I just make sure I have it on when I'm running errands, so I hatch eggs.
Huh. That's sometimes. It still bugs me that you just can't have it in the background, you know?
Now that would be sensible.
Yeah.
And I live in a fairly small town, so there's not a bunch of stuff around me, so I'm only level 15.
Oh. I think I'm on the same level, actually. I have no excuse.
I might be close to level 6. I'm terrible at remembering to play when I do go outside.
Yeah, it's just making it coincide with your other errands is the way to success as far as I found it.
Yeah, and you know, when you don't go out that much, it's like, oh yeah, I probably should play that Pokemon thing, but then you don't leave the house for 2 days. But speaking of not leaving the house, I really just been playing Fallout Shelter and Dragon Age Inquisition, because for fun times, I want to see could I beat the boss in Descent. Not a spoiler, I still can't. I suck at that DLC, so I gave up on it. And I've just been playing the final DLC with one of my Inquisitors, just because it's more of like, I can play this with my eyes closed. It's something to do to occupy my brain.
And checking out fancy mustaches, apparently.
And what?
Checking out fancy mustaches.
I would say, Matt, whenever it does, whenever they get it working for the PS4, two mods you should just invest in without having to worry about the story is there's the ones with just the hairstyles that have been rearranged. It adds like a whole, like 80 options, I think.
Oh, wow.
And the one that makes it so that you can tell your followers to get a haircut and then decide what their haircut is.
Oh, that's kind of cool. Yeah, I'll have to mess around with that.
Kind of makes you a dick, but...
But it's Fallout.
No, MacReady, you're getting a mohawk. This is not up for discussion.
MacReady and mohawk will probably be better.
Yeah, we need to do something about what's that guy who's with the railroad that becomes your assistant?
Huh?
Who's the guy with the railroad that becomes your sidekick? I forget his name. It's just escaping me. It's completely gone. I don't know.
Pompadour guy?
Yeah, but he like goes from Pompadour to being bald and then back again.
Yeah, that guy.
Deacon? Yeah, he's just
Paladin Dance?
No, it's Deacon. Oh,
Deacon. Yeah. He plays fast and loose with the hairstyles, man. He has no care whatsoever.
Wow.
I guess, if you're using him, that changes the narrative entirely because you've already just decided you've had enough.
Right.
I tried to get back into Fallout, and that first mission where you have to go to the warehouse and clear out those folks, I can't.
That's a lot of missions.
Well, the very first mission. So after you do
the car factory?
Yes. After you may press
the car. I hate that car factory.
And, you know, he's like, oh, go over here and talk to these people. And then they give you a mission, you know, to go clear out this car factory. And then they say they'll join the Minutemen.
That's the only one of the Minutemen quests where it's, like, predetermined where you go.
Yeah, so I feel like that's just really imbalanced. It's like, hey, you're level 3. Here's a Death Claw. And then you go do that mission, and it's just like nonstop enemies.
I wish you could use the system they use for pacification to try to initiate dialogue with people who are attacking you. That would be much more Fallout-y, in my opinion, and it would be very easy to kind of program from where they've already gotten to, because you can already turn people into allies when you max out your charisma.
Yeah, they are not interested in being my allies. And like, what I found is it just seems like a design thing where it's like, okay, so you figured things out. You've picked up all the stuff. And we're going to go throw you in this mission where everything's shooting at you and there's no respite. And you can die super easy because people throw grenades at you.
You could try sneaking.
Apparently,
technically, you only have to kill one guy.
Yeah, it's getting to that one guy, though.
Apparently there's a build called the Scientist build that's supposed to help you level up very quickly. And next time I roll a character, I'm going to play around with that a little bit. This YouTuber, Fudge Muppet, came up with the build, and apparently a lot of people really dig it.
Huh.
Yeah, I know one guy has he played through Fallout 4 without killing anyone, but he did orchestrate several people's deaths. But, you know, so the counter in his Pip-Boy said he had not killed anyone, and he got most of his experience from crafting random objects.
And didn't he almost break
the... Yeah, I've had 50 couches in a settlement.
But didn't that...
You said didn't he almost break the game or something like that?
I think so, yeah. I think there are certain parts of the game where it's impossible to not murder.
Yeah, I think the pacifist playthrough broke some things in the core game, because it was an article that we saw a while ago.
Yeah, it was quite a while ago, but it's it seems like it sounds like what the Scientist build is like min maxing that so that you have the maximum like crafting ability, and then you can just make stuff that's good enough for the combat, right?
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not Metal Gear with the whole pacifism thing. But then again, what is?
Not much, really. Because I'm usually not on the pacifist round in any game that I play, so.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I start out that way, but I definitely never finish that way.
Nope.
Renegade. It's like, you know what? No, you deserve to die.
No, I usually start more Paragon than get more Renegade as the game goes on. So
exactly.
But sadly, with that's a wrap. Except for you telling folks where to find you online.
Once again, thank you so much for having me on this 60th episode of the show. And for those that do want to find me, you can find me on Twitter at GCPDMatt. You can visit the website, MightyInc.net. You can also go to our Facebook page, Mighty Ink Comics. You can look for GCPD on iTunes to find all those episodes of Cast Today, as I mentioned, from this year and last year. You can follow the Chicago Nerd Social Club at Chicago Nerds on Twitter. And just a special shout out to our friends over at Uncanny Magazine. You can support their Kickstarter for year 3. I'm a space unicorn. You should be a space unicorn, too.
That's awesome. I feel like that should be the end, even though, like, David and I haven't said where to find us. So, David, where can people find you?
Yeah, I can most easily be found on Twitter at Red Conversation, on Patreon at patreon.com/Red Conversation, if you... And, yeah, that's basically what I need to tell people about.
And I'm Cypher of Tear, basically everywhere. So if you find CypherOftyr, Cypher of Tear, that should be me. If it's not, oh well. And with that, we've wrapped up episode 60. And thank you so much, Matt, for hanging out with us, for the great conversation.
It was my pleasure.
It was awesome. And next week, we will have Brandon Stennis, also known as UGR Gaming. And we're going to have him on to talk about, you know, Twitch streaming and community things and his upcoming panels, I think, at TwitchCon. And he will be at PAX West, but he'll be there with XSplit, which is a gaming streaming platform that he is now the community manager for in North America. So with that, we are done with episode 60. We'll see you in a week. Bye. We'll be right back.